The Public Relations Committee of the Rhode Island Bar Association, in cooperation with WPRO-TV, as a public service, presents a bipartisan discussion of the Fair Housing Bill, now pending in the Rhode Island Legislature. Two members of the Bar Association will speak in favor of the bill, and two will speak against it. The opinions and arguments which may be presented tonight are not those of the Rhode Island Bar Association or of WPRO-TV. Here now is Mr. Milton Stensler, our moderator and a member of the bar.
Good evening. The so-called Fair Housing Bill, which was introduced in the Rhode Island General Assembly on January 7th of this year, raises several important legal, social, and economic questions. The Rhode Island Bar Association believes that it is in the public interest to discuss the pros and cons of this proposed legislation. With me tonight are fellow attorneys and members of the Rhode Island Bar Association. They are Edward F. Burke, Melvin L. Zuria, who are supporting the bill, and Edward L. Nyes, Jr., and John A. Mutta, who are opposing the bill. Now, Mr. Burke, I would like to direct my first question to you. Would you please summarize briefly the Fair Housing Law, what it proposes, how it is designed to accomplish these proposals?
Certainly, Mr. Stensler. I'll try to keep it brief, and therefore I'll give the meat of it. If anybody has any question as to my definition of the bill or what it contains, they can, of course, raise the point. The bill has been introduced into both the Senate and the House. The Senate number is S-31, and it's entitled An Act Concerning Discriminatory Housing Practices and Policies Based Upon Race or Color, Religion or Country of Ancestral Origin, and defining further the functions, powers, and duties of the Commission Against Discrimination relative thereto. Now, this act, which is many pages in length, outlines certain practices as far as the selling and rental of housing accommodations, which the bill would declare to be unlawful. That is, to discriminate in the selling of a house, or in the renting of a house, or in making or in setting up inquiry as to tenants, or in making loans to people who are attempting to purchase a house because of the race, creed, or color of that person. That, in essence, is what this bill is about. And it pertains to all housing except for a private dwelling unit as to lodgers or roomers who might live within that single individual unit. Other than that, it is an all-encompassing bill. Now, to enforce this bill, the present act, S-31, incorporates by reference the Commission Against Discrimination, which was set up under the FEPC Act, so-called, in Rhode Island in 1949, which is Title 28, Chapter 5 of the General Laws of 1956. Now, the Commission Against Discrimination has certain procedures which it has used as far as fair employment practices are concerned, which it has used as far as the later enactment of a bill, Title 11, Chapter 24 of the General Laws of 56, relating to discrimination as to public accommodations in places like hotels. Now, the Commission Against Discrimination looks into any complaint that is made by a person who feels he has been discriminated against and by certain other enumerated groups that may bring a complaint to the commission. They attempt, through an informal series of conferences and conciliatory procedures, to get at the bottom of the complaint and to find whether or not there's any justification for such complaint. Subsequent to this, if they are unable, through initial conciliation, to correct the problem, they go forward and start formal proceedings within the Commission Against Discrimination. Certain procedures are set up to protect the interests of all parties. A written statement of the charge of discrimination is given to the party complained of so that he may examine it before there is any hearing. The party cited may bring counsel if he so chooses, and all of his legal rights are protected in this manner. After the hearing, if the commission does in fact find that there is discrimination, the commission may then issue a cease and desist order, ordering the person to cease and desist his discriminatory activity. There is, after that, a 30-day appeal period in which either the complaining party or the party complained of can go forward to the Superior Court of Rhode Island and have a hearing in the Superior Court concerning this matter. From the Superior Court, review may be had at the Supreme Court, and I may say that at the Superior Court level, evidence may be introduced, additional evidence which was not introduced before the Commission Against Discrimination, if in fact the judge in the Superior Court feels that it is in the best interests of justice to have this additional information. I may say also, Mr. Stanzler, in conclusion, that the practice of the Commission Against Discrimination as far as enforcing the FEPC and the public accommodation sections has been that they have had approximately 350 complaints brought to them, and they have been able to settle all of them without being forced to go to court. The conciliatory machinery has worked in Rhode Island to this point.
You have about outlined the proposed bill. I would like to hear now from Mr. Nyes if he will tell us why he opposes the bill, and I'm sure he has some cogent reasons.
Regardless of the social objectives claimed by the proponents of this bill, regardless of the emotional and high-sounding arguments made in its behalf, the real effect of this bill is to deprive the individual of rights, basic rights, rights which are common to a man in any free society, the right to enjoy the benefits of property ownership and the rights to deal with his property as he sees fit and to associate with whom he sees fit in regard to this property. Now, the proponents of the bill have sought to create the impression that anyone who is opposed to this bill is opposed to removing any unsanitary or unsafe or unfair housing that may exist, and that the opponents of the bill are against giving aid to any of these unfortunate people. Of course, this is not true. This isn't so. Everyone who is opposed to this bill is not a bigot. Everyone who is opposed to this bill is not prejudiced. I don't like bigots, and I don't like people who are prejudiced against a man because of the color of his skin or because of his religion or because of his national background. But I feel that we've got to look at this thing and see, is this bill the panacea, the cure-all for all these purported ills? Is the answer to pass a bill which would deprive a man of the right to sell or rent his house or an apartment in his house to a decent, law-abiding citizen and thereby be jailed for doing so? And I think that's the real effect of the bill. I think it's misnamed because I don't think the bill is fair in any sense. It seeks to deprive one group of rights to give the rights to another group.
Mr. Mutter, do you have any further reasons for opposing the bill that, in addition to those set forth by Mr. Nyes?
Well, to supplement what Mr. Nyes has said, I have a very practical example. Last evening, a woman called me who had read in the paper that we were going to be on this broadcast. Now, she told me that she owns a house. She does not live in that house herself, but she rents apartments there. And she further explained to me that certainly she wasn't prejudiced against renting to anyone. But she said, suppose the other tenants in my house are opposed to certain groups. If I rent to one of these minority groups, as she expressed it, these other tenants may move out on me. If they do, then I may have four or five vacant tenements within my house. And this being my only source of income, I am being penalized even though I am not bigoted or prejudiced. Of course, in regard to the bill itself, further, as Mr. Nyes expressed it, I think it is unconstitutional because it's a taking away of rights which belong to another. Now, certainly no one is opposed to charity. By charity, I mean a free giving of what one owns to someone else. But we cannot, by law, take rights which belong to somebody else and forcibly give them to another party.
Now, I know you people to my right are anxious to answer some of these issues raised by the people to my left. But before doing so, I would like to ask you, Mr. Zuria, why you believe, as the proponents, that this bill is needed at this time.
Well, Mr. Stanzler, this bill is needed for any number of reasons. In the first place, we're lawyers here, and perhaps it isn't our province to speak along the spiritual lines that have been so eloquently discussed from the pulpits of every leading responsible congregation in this state, Catholic, Protestant, Jewish, every spectrum of religion. Every responsible minister has not only endorsed this bill, he's enthusiastically endorsed it because of the need, the moral and spiritual need for brotherhood, which this bill represents. But as I say, we're lawyers and not ministers, and I don't want to address myself to that. I think we have a more pressing, immediate situation, though, right here in Rhode Island. All we have to do is look at this map of the city of Providence here. On this map, we see the areas of concentration of non-white population in the city. And I'd like to call particular attention to the Lippitt Constitution Hill section. Each dot on this map represents a family unit according to the census of 1950. Turning around the city of Providence, we see a similar concentration in Fox Point. We see another one in Cotting Court. These things don't just happen by themselves, even discounting the normal desire of people to live close to people who look like them and act like them. We're very proud in this city of our redevelopment program. Providence has indeed drawn national recognition because of the fine projects which we have. But these redevelopment programs bring about a situation which cries for this kind of bill. Actions and statistics perhaps speak louder than words. In the city of Providence, since the Willard Center, West River Project, Point Street Project, and the proposed Lippitt Hill Project, of the total number of people who will have been relocated, forced to move in the face of public redevelopment, less than 1% of the white population will have been forced to relocate, but more than 28% of the Negro population, the non-white population, will have been forced to relocate. We look forward with great anticipation to the Central Classical Project, to the Randall Square Project, to the freeways that are going to come into our state. When these have been completed, though, less than 3% of the white population of the city will have been affected, will have been forced to relocate. But almost 60% of the Negro population will have been forced to move in the face of progress. Now the question is, where do you put these people? We've got to have housing for them to live in, and it's unfortunate that we do not have housing today because of discriminatory practices. The discriminatory practices can be best summed up by one or two more statistics. Last summer, our Providence Relocation Service, in anticipation of what was going to happen over in Lippitt Hill, made a survey. And in this survey, they looked over all of the available housing in the city of Providence where the people from Lippitt Hill might be relocated. This survey found that of the 946 units which were available to rent to people, the owners of these units said that only 66 of these were available to Negroes. Of the 330 units that were available for sale in the city, only 68 were available, were open to Negroes. Here we have marked discrimination. Here we have a situation which cries out for something to be done about it. We don't claim a bill as a panacea any more than any bill is a panacea, but we definitely think it's a step in the right direction.
Now, what do you think about the need for this bill, Mr. Mutter?
Well, as I have probably expressed the first time you called on me, Milton, I feel that there is no need for this bill. I feel that the basic difference between any communistic or socialistic or federal, feudalistic type of government and democracy is the right of ownership of property. A man works hard all his life, he saves a little money, and he manages to buy a piece of property. I don't feel that the government has the right to come in and tell him what he can do with that property. Now, as far as the bill itself is concerned, Many people have not studied this bill and don't realize exactly what it contains. Now, not only is it a violation to refuse to sell to people or rent to people of a different race, creed, or color, it is a violation of this bill even to inquire as to their race, creed, or color. Furthermore, in these hearings before the Commission Against Discrimination, the rules of evidence as we know them in our courts of law are not applicable, which means that hearsay evidence is admissible. It can be this sort of thing, where a witness can testify, I heard someone else say that the person who was the defendant in here is prejudiced, and that will be admissible before the commission.
Well, I'd like to examine now, if we could, several objections that you have raised to the bill. Mr. Burke, I wonder if you would answer at this point the charge that has been made that the bill is unconstitutional.
Well, Milton, I am firmly convinced that this bill is constitutional. To begin with, we have had on our books here in Rhode Island for the past 10 years the state FEPC bill. There has been no constitutional challenge to the state FEPC bill that I know of. In other states, there have been similar laws. There are laws relating to housing and to discrimination in housing in New York City, and in 15 states, I believe, and in 16 cities. And the citations are numerous. I'm not going to take up the audience's time now upholding the constitutionality of a matter of this sort. If Mel, if you've got anything to add to that, I'd appreciate it if you would, but I think I've tried to cover it.
Go ahead, Mr. Zuri, if you wish, because we'll then ask the other side to specify their reasons for the unconstitutionality of this bill.
Well, I'd very much appreciate the opportunity to speak for a moment or two about the constitutionality of the bill. In the first place, this is no revolutionary piece of legislation in this state. As was pointed out in the journal yesterday, Rhode Island is only one among 13 states where bills such as this are currently being debated. The state of New York has long had a bill dealing against discriminatory practices in private housing where the housing is built with publicly assisted funds. Our neighboring states of Massachusetts and Connecticut both have bills of this sort. Only in New York has the question of constitutionality been raised in the courts, and the one time where it has been raised, the New York Supreme Court, in the only test so far, has strongly affirmed the constitutionality of the act. This is a very carefully drawn bill. Anytime the legislature acts with a bill of this sort, it carries with it a presumption of constitutionality, and our Supreme Court has said over and over again that in order to show that a bill is unconstitutional, the burden is upon that party beyond a reasonable doubt. I don't think that that burden could be met in this case. Any question of constitutionality basically reflects the good sense of the community. Now we're talking about rights. The property right is very important in our society. We respect the right of the individual to hold and own property, and no one would dream of limiting that right unless it were absolutely necessary for the state to do so. But property rights are limited. It's been said that one's right to swing his fist ends where another man's nose begins, and the same thing holds true with property. Every time you pay taxes, your property rights are being limited. Every time you're forced to conform to zoning laws, your property rights are being limited. Our Constitution is not an inflexible document. It recognizes not only property rights, but human rights. And where, as in this case, the police power of a state is invoked to protect the welfare and the health and the safety of the community, then our Supreme Court, our United States Supreme Court, recognizes that property rights may have to give way.
Now, if I may, I'd like to move along at this point to ask Mr. Nyes why he believes that the bill is unconstitutional.
Well, I'd like to direct myself, first of all, to something that Mel Zuri said. He talked about property rights, and that's something that we commonly hear by the supporters of this bill, that property rights must give way when human rights are involved. Now, I feel very definitely that this is a ridiculous proposition. Property has no rights. There are nothing but human rights involved. And it's the human right of a person to hold property and to enjoy the benefits of the property. The property as such has no rights. Now, referring to the unconstitutionality of the bill, the right to acquire private property is a valid extension of the unalienable rights which are spoken of in the Declaration of Independence. Both the Constitution of Rhode Island and the Constitution of the United States prohibit depriving a man of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And police powers which interfere with the use and enjoyment of private property are very carefully scrutinized. Interference will not be countenanced unless they bear a real, substantial, reasonable, and legitimate relationship to the public health, safety, or general welfare. A one-sided law, the type of this bill, which professes to uphold civil liberties for some at the cost of personal liberties, which we all have, is neither reasonable nor legitimate, as I see it. The most fundamental form of private property is a man's home. In Rhode Island, up to now, a man's home was his castle. And I would, if I might, inject here some words which were spoken by William Pitt many, many years ago. William Pitt said, "The poorest man may, in his cottage, bid defiance to all the forces of the crown. The wind may blow through it, the rains may enter, the storms may enter, but the King of England may not enter." And I think that's apropos in a discussion of this type, where you're going to say to a man, you no longer have control of what you can do with your property. But I do feel that the constitutionality or unconstitutionality of the bill is not so much the issue here. We're not so much concerned with what the legislature can do, but what the legislature should do in the interests of all the people of the state of Rhode Island.
Mr. Burke, I note that you might want to have a comment to make here. You go right ahead.
I think I would. To begin with, I think that the legislature at the present moment is trying to act in the best interests of all the people of the state of Rhode Island. A right in property is no absolute right whatsoever. We see around us every day such things as zoning laws. You cannot put in any given area of the city of Providence or the state of Rhode Island the type of structure that any type of structure that you desire. Certain property rights have been taken away for the common good in that particular area. As far as nuisance is concerned, we have laws of nuisance which also regulate the use that people may put for their property. Now, I think it's very applicable here. Mel Zurier pointed out very well before the need in the state of Rhode Island, with urban redevelopment coming along, for housing for Negroes. And I think that this is a situation where the ultimate good of the entire community is more important than the individual good of property. For example, I'd like to quote to you from Father Flannery, the editor of the Providence Visitor. He said recently, "I think a man has a right to do with his property what he wants until his doing it creates a grave social problem. Once that happens, the government has a right, a duty to intervene." And that is what has happened here. We have numerous case studies in Rhode Island of some of the things that have been going on. I'm not going to take too much of your time with it. But down in the city of Warwick, there was a fine young woman by the name of Dolores Greer. She still teaches in the city of Warwick. She was an honor student at Aldrich High School in 1951. She is a Negro. About a year ago, she and a young man were planning to be married. This young lady who was teaching in Warwick Memorial High School tried for weeks and weeks and weeks to obtain housing in the city of Warwick. She was totally unsuccessful. Finally, the Commission on Discrimination put an ad in the Providence Journal, and the Providence Journal also publicized this problem. And finally, three public-spirited citizens in Cranston came forward and said that they would rent property to this couple, and they finally did get a home. There is a need, there's a crying need, and I think that in this situation, the good of the whole is going to be served by the enactment of this bill.
Well, you raise another question, as has been raised by several of you, with respect to the property values. Mr. Mutter, one of the arguments that has been raised a good deal is the fact that it is said that there will be a depreciation of property values if a member of a minority group moves into a particular neighborhood.
I feel that I can't give you a blanket answer on that, Milton, because it will depend upon the individual circumstances, the individual families involved. There may or there may not be, depending upon the individuals. But let me comment first of all. I have just a couple of comments, and I'll make them as brief as possible. The proponents, the gentlemen on the other side, have suggested to us, or would have us believe, that these laws in other states have never been found unconstitutional. The fact of the matter is, there hasn't been any law passed in any other state. The only state having such a law which is akin to this is New York, and there it isn't a state law, it's a city ordinance in the city of New York itself. Not only that, but they've drawn a simile between this law and the zoning laws, and it's entirely different. The zoning laws are passed for the general welfare of all landowners in that community. Not only that, but these laws the courts have interpreted must be strictly interpreted. Yet this bill here, by its language, said that this bill must be liberally construed to fulfill all these purposes. I don't believe that this bill can achieve the effect that we all want to achieve, that is the elimination of discrimination. All this bill can hope to do is to drive discrimination and bigotry underground, where it will be harder to handle in the long run.
Mr. Zuri, could you briefly comment on the question of whether or not a property owner will be deprived of his freedom to select his tenants?
Mr. Stanzler,
we just have a few seconds for this, so if you can give
I wish I had time to quote more fully an argument which was raised this way by my brother here tonight. In 1949 and prior thereto, these identical arguments were raised in connection with the FEPC law. Such a law would destroy a right of a person to associate with whomever he pleases, to select his friends, and so forth. Well, of course, the success of the FEPC law should take away some of the sting of the fears of our brothers here tonight, because the FEPC law, everyone will concede, has been good for Rhode Island. I think that one's right to select his associates under this law will no more be limited than the FEPC law has limited the right of an employer to select his associate.
Mill, do I have a second?
Just a second, if you will.
I would like to say that this bill does not provide any positive course of action for providing suitable housing for anyone. All it does is set up a penal system to put someone in jail who doesn't provide the housing.
Now, if I may summarize for both sides here with the brief time that we have, the opponents to the bill say that property owners will be deprived of their rights insofar as the enjoyment of the use of their property and insofar as the selection of the property, giving it to tenants from whoever they wish. The proponents of the bill say that it is an unfair housing practice to refuse to sell, rent, lease, or loan any housing accommodation because of race, color, religion, country of ancestral origin. And they say that if that is so, that a complaint would be sent to the Rhode Island Commission Against Discrimination, who would, by conference, persuasion, conciliation, attempt to alleviate these particular complaints of discrimination. If by these methods of conference, persuasion, or conciliation, this cannot be effected, Commission Against Discrimination would issue hearings on formal complaint. These are the issues. Now, if you, as a member of the listening audience, desire to communicate one way or another with the individuals, you may do so by contacting the members of the Rhode Island Senate or House. Thank you for listening to us tonight. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us for this very interesting discussion on this most important matter.
You've just heard five members of the Rhode Island Bar Association in a discussion of the controversial Fair Housing Act, now before the Rhode Island Legislature. This program was presented by the Public Relations Committee of the Rhode Island Bar Association in cooperation with the WPRO-TV as a public service. The views expressed do not necessarily represent the views of the Rhode Island Bar Association or of WPRO-TV.